So keep an eye out for that, and you'll see some new features in the members area, not just for founding members, but for everybody. But we're also going to have a new, awesome new feature called Ambassador Status. And a lot of the founding members are going to be given what's called Ambassador Status, where they can actually hold meetup groups and be the center of their town. There's only one ambassador per city, and that person kind of rules that town. And all the other DAO members will be contacting them to like follow up with meetups and things like that to actually meet up and talk about stuff they learned. You know, Brad, did you say something?
Kidding. I said it was a fiefdom, but
a what?
Fiefdom.
A fiefdom.
What is that?
Why don't you handle that one, Brad?
It's a lord of a manor ruling over his serfs.
Fiefdom? How do you spell that?
F-I-E-F-D-O-M.
I'm going to look this up.
It was a governing style in the Middle Ages.
I just looked up fiefdom on the dictionary, and it says, noun, a fief. That's what it says. So,
like, just, oh.
I get it now. Okay, cool. Okay. Cool. So, guys, if you have any questions, I want to see those. I'm going to go ahead and jump right into the questions about this, the questions that we might have for Cameron. And I know that Cameron's got a lot of, like I said, really specific knowledge around personality typing. So I'm going to go ahead and talk to him a little bit about it first. And then after that, I'd love to get some questions sort of opened up to him, and then mix that with my knowledge of attraction and sort of give this perfect storm of a founding members call for you guys so that we can get some really cool responses and great insights during this call. So, Cameron, if you could just kind of talk for a second about what personality typing is and what you've sort of, you know, you've been through a lot of iterations of personality typing, but the most recent one that you've come to, the most recent like sort of really accurate version of personality typing, talk a little bit about that and what kind of implications that will have on the people who are listening to this call.
Sure. Well, personality typing basically starts from one very simple observation that's familiar to, I think, all of us, and that is that people are different from each other. People are not, like, the way I think, the way I experience life, the way I approach problem solving, and many other aspects of my experience is going to be very, very different from your approach, from the way that makes sense to you. Now, this is kind of obvious. We can, you know, look around and see evidence of this in pretty much all the people we know. The really cool thing, though, is that there is a pattern that explains the different kind of overall strategies people use, the kind of overall experiences they have, the way that they approach life. There's a predictable, reliable system framework for dividing people up into respective categories. And once you do that, once you figure out which group they belong to, you have a very deep, powerful insight into who they are and what makes sense to them. You, among other things, have a pretty good idea of what their greatest hidden talent is, what their greatest natural strength is, the kinds of things that will put them at their best, the kinds of things that will put them at their worst, what kinds of questions they're going to be asking before they make any kind of decision, before they make a judgment call, and what kinds of things are going to pique their interest. There's a lot more to it than that, but that's some of the most important things you gather just from knowing where a person falls in a specific framework.
So before you continue, sure. I'm just going to translate a little bit of what you said there, because that's you're very smart, and that's kind of going over my head a little bit, but I know what you're saying.
Oh, okay.
So basically, the way that this benefits you is, and if you can get to this point where I think a lot of people have a really hard time getting to the point where you are, where you can basically all but look at someone for about 20 minutes and get a pretty good estimate without even interacting with them. You can see them interacting with other people,
right,
and get to that point. That essentially means that you can look at a girl you never met before and walk up and speak her language.
Absolutely.
Just her language and not anyone else's language, right?
Right.
So that means that she'll feel like she's known you for her whole life within a matter of moments. She'll feel like you get her and no one else does. You know, she'll feel like this is the easiest conversation she's had in months, where, you know, before maybe it was very, very difficult for her to connect with other people. Also, it allows you to see which people you're naturally going to be easy to talk to. Right, so you can walk into a room, even not even knowing how to speak other languages, you can see certain behaviors in certain women that are going to say that they are going to click well with you. And this is something that I really wanted to touch on just briefly
yeah,
today, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's a really powerful concept. But more importantly, I think the idea is that you can actually walk into a room and just by standing there and observing for a minute, see where every woman is coming from in that place. Sometimes you'll be really close, obviously, really accurate, because they're really a lot more expressive. For example, extroverts were probably a little bit more expressive of what they...
Yeah, some people are definitely easier to gauge than others.
Right. So you'll be more certain about certain people. But at the same token, and I've gotten to the point where I can come close to, mostly from spending time with you guys and studying with you, being able to walk into a place and tell immediately. I haven't been able to alter my own perspective, like my own style yet, mm-hmm. to meet that person where they are, but I can see where they are, at least for now, sort of see the matrix for that.
Right.
So this is something that is worth worth years of study and for mastery, but that takes too long, obviously. You teach people to do it rapidly, which is what you do. Now, that still takes several weeks, 12 weeks or something, your training courses?
Depends on how far you want to go. For people that want like the kind of ultimate experience, we have a 6-month course where we meet with them an hour a week for 6 months, and that gives you the whole thing top to bottom. But you can get enough knowledge to be dangerous in 12 weeks, 9 weeks, maybe
12 weeks. Okay.
Dangerous.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
To do evil things, like the fruits of the devil. You know? No. You want to get that reference or no? Fruits of the Devil.
That was Saturday Night Live, wasn't it?
It was Mike Myers, but
Mike Myers, close.
It was from Sorry I Married an Axe Murderer.
Right.
Evil, the Fruits of the Devil.
Get down, hid.
Hid. Anyway, so, enough of that. Let me kind of go into what I've learned from this process and what helped create Hacking Attraction, which was like the biggest revelation that most guys have is in Hacking Attraction is just going through the natural, normal personality typing process, right? Mm-hmm. And I water it down quite a bit because it's kind of difficult to mass produce this concept. Just like any Myers-Briggs test, like it's fairly accurate, but really if you're with someone in person, you can obviously get a lot more of a solid read.
Right. Well, I think it was... again, I don't want to get too far off track here, but I think it was Korzybski that said the map is not the territory.
But he was wrong about that, though.
He was wrong about many things.
The map is the territory.
So unpacking that phrase, what that basically means is we use systems to understand reality. We use maps to understand where we are in physical reality, and we use models to understand where we are in various other aspects of our lives. We can use models to understand different people, so that's a social model, and so on. But this is still a model. I mean, you're looking at a map of California, and you look around you standing in California, and they're obviously two very different things. The model or the map is very helpful, but it's not the same as the reality. So this is the same thing. We're talking about a model of understanding people. So actual people are much more complex than this, but the model is very, very helpful. It gives you an idea of where you're at, where you're trying to go, and how to get there.
Okay, so whenever I studied for Hacking Attraction, and I came out of that with the framework that I had, I ended up combining a couple parts of one of your main systems, which is you study a lot of Myers-Briggs typing, mm-hmm. and part of another meta system mm-hmm. Called sameness-difference typing, right? So you know about sameness-difference?
Yep.
And whenever I did that, I combined it and I made these four different quadrants mm-hmm. that you can fall into. And these different quadrants sort of depict how you approach dating in general, right? So if you're a sameness person, you see things as being similar. Mm-hmm. Just on the surface, you see things as being similar. You're more likely to see women as being all the same.
Right.
Which means you'll be more likely to approach lots of them and not get a rapport very often, right?
Right.
Difference people tend to learn faster. Because they look at every situation they're in is different, but they also tend to get needy too quickly because they invest everything in one person immediately.
Right.
So that was one thing, and then I took what I think was personally the, and you probably have a serious opinion about this, I guess I'll hear about it, but I thought personally the most...
Oh, you'll hear about it.
Yeah. personally, I thought this was the most powerful element of Myers-Briggs. There are four different areas, right? There's the extrovert-introvert process.
Technical term is the dichotomies, but yeah.
Dichotomies, okay. So there's extrovert-introvert dichotomy, uh-huh. the intuitive-sensor dichotomy, the thinker feeler and then the perceiver judger.
Yes.
Dichotomy. Now, and when it comes to dating, extrovert introvert sounds like it's really important because you can last longer talking in a group of people if you're extroverted, typically. Not everybody, but most extroverts can.
You will shine in different circumstances.
And that circumstance is a social circumstance for most extroverts. And then for introverts, it may not be.
For introverts, they're great one-on-one, small groups that they know well. That's where they do really well. They're good at often, not always, but often good at getting into rapport. They're great at having one-on-one conversations and like two, three people max.
Right.
But in larger groups, yeah, they're a little bit out of their element. And so that kind of drains them quickly and they end up, as you said, not being able to sustain it. So they wear out.
Right. They wear out earlier than extroverts would. Exactly. And that just means they don't have as much experience anymore because they're leaving early or they're tapping out early. Right.
Right.
So you would think that would be one of the elements that I'd use, but it's not. I think that that's important, but I don't think that that's one of the major
qualities
when it comes to attracting women, right?
Yep.
In my opinion, the major differentiator is perceiver judger. So if you like surroundings that you understand versus new surroundings, that changes everything about you. When it comes to what you prefer, right? So there are four different types that I came up with, and this is kind of like...
Let me just jump in real quick. There is a big misconception. If you're familiar with this stuff at all, I'm sure you've heard some of these terms before, perceiver, judger, and so on and so forth. There's a big misconception as to what perceiver and judger actually means. People think that judger means that you're kind of straight-laced, organized, buttoned up, and... kind of a stick in the mud, and perceivers are fun, spontaneous, chaotic, disorganized, always late for everything.
And these are both absolutely 100% true all the time.
They are absolutely 100% true part of the time, yeah. Those are behaviors that come from kind of a deeper place, and what's going on the deeper level is more accurate and more interesting. The distinction at its heart is simply that perceivers like to organize their inner world inside their head, and they like to explore their outside world and have fun and freedom out there. Judgers are the opposite. They like to have fun and freedom in their head, in their inner world, and they like to organize things outside. So what you were saying environmentally has a big impact. Judgers are much more comfortable in an environment that they're familiar with because they know where stuff is. They've kind of already figured it out. They're not having to adapt to it in real time. Perceivers, on the other hand, they're in their element when they're having to adapt real time because they love doing that. It's fun and exploratory for them. Right. So
yeah. It's actually challenging on our belief systems when we hear something new. So as a perceiver, if I hear something that is a belief that I haven't challenged yet,
right,
I spend a lot of time and everything else in my life stops until I figure this challenge out, this belief, right?
Yeah.
I have to figure it out because in my head, I need to know ahead of time what I'm going to say.
You've got to have your inner world organized. You have to know what you think, know what you believe, know what you feel.
Right, exactly. So this is like, this was the most important part of it to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? It's major.
And the reason why is because we're out at a bar, right? Let's say that it's you and me standing out of the bar. You're an introverted judger.
Uh-huh.
I'm an extroverted perceiver.
Right.
Right. You're probably a difference person.
Yes.
I'm a difference person too. Yes. Right. So you're what's called, a difference judger is what's called a super connector.
Right.
So you look at every interaction as being different, and you like environments that are smaller, understandable, more understandable as a person. So that means that you're going to be much more suited for a rapport environment.
Yeah.
Right? You've got one girl who's different than all the rest. You can see all those different qualities, so you can really connect with her.
Right. Right?
And not just because you're introverted, but because you're that difference person.
Right.
And then the judger side of you is going to be like, well, I understand this environment, so I'm not even thinking about the environment anymore. I'm just with this person. Right.
Right.
I'm just exploring this, how she makes me feel.
Yeah.
And that is part of that is just how it feels to be a super connector. I'm what's called a super learner. Super learners are perceiver difference people.
Mm-hmm.
Perceivers have high impact and very quick, like high impact environments, as in things they don't understand. If I understand everything about an area, I get really bored, right? So this is part of what Kelsey and I kind of have this like... part of our relationship, my girlfriend and I, where she's a judger and I'm a perceiver, where she strives for things to be more understandable and more clear, and I strive for things to be more chaotic, you know?
Right.
And so we have that dance, you know?
Exactly. But you're talking, just for reference again, you're talking specifically about the outside world.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm talking about my house.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So in an external environment like that, she wants things organized and somewhat predictable, whereas for you that's boring. You prefer things were a little more free form, maybe a lot more.
This happens a lot in time management, obviously.
Exactly. In your inner world, it's the opposite.
Right, exactly. In my inner world, I need to know ahead of time.
Exactly.
I need to know what I want, what I think about this.
Right? Where she would probably be more comfortable just going, let's see.
Right, and she is, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't want to let's see, because what if it's not what I want?
Exactly.
So that was what I did to combine it. There are super learners are seeing every interaction as different, and also being in a high-impact environment, they learn really quickly.
Yeah, and I can back that up. The super learner category, hands down, picks up information quicker than any other group of people.
Right, and it's not that I'm going to master an area quicker. I'm not going to. But I am going to learn nuances really quickly.
Yes.
And it takes me a long time to master, to be honest. Like, it takes me a long time to get it to the point where I'm actually competent, because I'm too busy with all the tiny outliers and details.
Right.
And I don't get the broad strokes sometimes.
Right.
So, like, I would actually... No, I'm not going to say I don't master it quickly. I do master it quickly, but I don't actually grasp it quickly.
Right.
Like, grasp it as a whole. Like,
right.
Well enough to where I can do something. So that's that. There's two types. Another type, and guys, if you are listening to this now and you want to know more about Hacking Attraction course, you can just click on your Hacking Attraction button. Everybody who gets the Dial Bass, at least to get to day one of Hacking Attraction, which is a lot of information, I go over a lot of this stuff that we're talking about now. So if you want to know your type specifically, you can watch that later on. There's several videos in there, and I think you'll gain a whole lot from it. So you can do that. Just keep that in mind. It's in the members area. If you don't make good use of the members area, you're really wasting an extremely valuable resource. So
you should be shot.
You should be shot and buried in some undisclosed location where no one will ever visit you.
In Mexico.
In Mexico. I don't know why Mexico's bad, but if that's bad, then okay.
There's lots of desert there, so you'd never be found.
Okay. See?
Mexico or Arizona?
Arizona. It's basically the same place.
Yeah.
So next other two types, just to kind of get into the sameness types, guys,
uh-huh. Yep.
Just to cover this. Sameness judger, which is my exact opposite.
Right.
Is what's called a super framer. Super framer is somebody who sees women as being relatively similar, right?
Uh-huh.
And they like environments they understand.
Right.
So what they do is when a woman comes into their environment, they blanket everything with their world. So this woman walks into their world. They are stellar at creating worlds that other people join.
Right.
Because they refuse to go outside those worlds. They refuse to go in an environment they don't own.
Right. And they're often really good at constructing those worlds. I mean, if you run into a guy that just kind of has his own little bubble that he's living in and it totally works for him, this is what you're dealing with.
Right. Very likely the same as judger.
Exactly.
And then the other side of that, and by the way, the super framer is the opposite side of wherever you are is always the last one you want to master. Because you want to start in your natural strength and then work to your secondary, then your tertiary, then your weakness.
Yep.
If you start in your weakness, it will take you a lifetime to get even remotely okay.
Right. When you're working in your area of weakness, it just burns through your energy a lot quicker. So you don't have the stamina to be able to work on those skills nearly as much.
Right. Exactly.
It just takes a lot longer to learn.
Right. So you may try it for...
You can.
You may try it for a day, and then you need a week off.
Yeah, something like that.
Whereas otherwise, you could try it for a day if it was your primary.
Yep.
And then the next day, be energized from it.
Yeah.
And go out and do it again.
Even more excited than you were the day before.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the super framers. And then the last one is called the super skilled. Super skilled are sameness perceivers. High impact environments, see everybody's being the same. So they approach lots of people and they just look for the person who responds the best. Right, so this person is the person who gets really good at a small area of interaction, meaning the first 5 minutes of an interaction, they are stellar at it because they do it with everybody constantly.
Right. Right?
So super skilled are perceivers, again, high impact environments, new stuff, new interactions, right? But sameness, so they're kind of like the ones who are like, who cares? They're all chicks. Who gives a shit, you know?
Right.
Let's just go talk to him. Who cares, right?
Right.
And then, one girl ends up liking him a lot so that he goes home with her, typically, you know? So it's sort of a numbers game. So the way that we had these is I have it as numbers. There are numbers and targets,
uh-huh.
Guys. So the target guys are the guys who are difference, guys.
Right. They're selecting a specific target that they're kind of investing a lot of energy in.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And then the numbers guys are the sameness guys who blanket. everything and just look for the ones that pop up.
Kind of a shotgun approach. They try a bunch of stuff or the same thing a bunch of times, and it's going to work a certain percentage of those times, and that's what they're looking for.
These guys are great in the stock market.
Yeah.
And at poker.
Right.
So that's one. So we have target numbers. And then the other, which is hunter-gatherer. Right. Gatherers are going to be judges. Right. Hunters are going to be perceivers.
Right.
They're going to go out into the environment where they want to get something. Right. And that may be exciting to kind of go out and, talk to everyone or go out and talk to one person, but you're going to go get them. Right.
Right.
Judges would prefer people come to them.
Yes.
You know, and that's
overall definitely true. Yeah, I would have thought of, I threw me off for a minute when you said hunter-gatherer. I was thinking like, the metaphor I usually think of is hunting versus farming.
Farming is the same thing as
gathering. Same basic thing, yeah.
Yeah, you're cultivating the farming aspect, right. Like if it's farming, but gathering, you're actually bringing them to you.
Exactly.
And this is really how it seems too. And my friend actually came up with this idea a long time ago where he called it wolves versus spiders. Like wolves are the pack hunters and they go out. Spiders set the webs. But I was like, I'm so creeped out by spiders that I couldn't use that analogy.
Yeah.
He's actually in the Hacking Attraction course and he talks about it in the course because it was such a funny thing for him whenever I said it. I was like, I just can't use that, man. I got to rewrite this.
Well, spiders are creepy.
They are creepy. I'm not the only person who thinks that.
I mean, like, if you ever see like a video game or something, you know, like a fantasy video game, like the first level or two, the bad guys are spiders, you know, and they're the size of like Great Danes.
Yeah.
You know?
If that happens, I'm killing myself.
No way does that belong on the first level. That's like level 10, 12, 15 shit, you know? I would be screaming my head off and wetting myself if there was a spider the size of a Great Dane coming at me. I don't care how skilled I was as a fighter.
Especially if it was as fast as a regular spider.
I know, they're terrifying. Anyway.
This is relevant, by the way, guys. Write this down. Spiders are scary.
Take notes.
Write that down.
All of us. It's gold.
Ultimately, that was my system that I came up with for Hacking Attraction based on some of the psychology that you had taught me. And it was really, really powerful psychology. I'd like to get into a couple questions here in just a second.
Uh-huh.
But what I'd like to talk about next, I actually came up with another system that I haven't really revealed to hardly anyone called the Avatars.
Okay.
And the Avatars is a similar four-quadrant typing system for women.
Mm-hmm.
How you can type women when you're talking to them. And then I have a specific way to approach, to flirt with, to get the number from, to build rapport with, and to seduce and be in a relationship with every single one of these different types of avatars. And they're really simple questions to ask. Like, you can ask them at a bar. It's not a big deal, right?
Right, and it's a conversation piece anyway, so it facilitates an interesting conversation.
Exactly. So on the surface, it's something completely just fun to talk about, but what you're doing is actually gathering data and shifting how you're approaching this. Not who you are, but how you're approaching this to appeal to her personality type.
Right.
So I'll tell you a little about the avatars in just a little
cool.
bit. Just put your name and email in right here, and then I'll email it to you.
Okay. I'm typing now.
So we'll get into that in a little bit, guys. First, let's take a... let's see. Okay. I see. Okay. So we had a clarification on a couple of things. Let me go ahead and get to a couple of these questions. Victor just asked a minute ago, does personality typing have anything to do with Myers-Briggs? But... I think that what he meant, he clarified, is that do the avatars have anything to do with Myers-Briggs? And you don't know the answer to that question yet.
I do not. I can answer the first question before the clarification.
Okay, so do personality types have anything to do with Myers-Briggs?
Yeah, Myers-Briggs is one personality typing system. There are many, and many of the best ones, including Myers-Briggs, have the same root. It all comes down to the work that Carl Jung did around 100 years ago. On personality type. So Myers-Briggs came from Carl Jung's work, and a handful of other systems also came from his work, so they're all kind of related in the same family. There are other systems that have nothing to do with that. Enneagram is one of them. But what I'm talking about and Myers-Briggs are related.
Okay. So, but before, after the clarification, the Avatars is half Myers-Briggs and half of a metatype, just like Hacking Attraction course.
So metatype is an NLP typing framework, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it can be any type. I mean, there are plenty, and they're kind of like the Island of Misfit Toys as far as typing systems go.
Right.
I mean, they're just random, and they don't seem to have anything to do with each other, right?
Right.
Myers-Briggs is specific for these four different dichotomies.
Right.
But there aren't any other, outside of that, in the metatypes, there's no like four four dichotomies put together in a group, right, that come up with different solutions.
Right, and the metatypes, they're all kind of these one-off little...
cowboys, basically.
Yeah, little sets of traits, and you're going to be, you know, one of this little collection, but they don't really fit together in any kind of coherent system.
Right. So whenever I put this together, I use part of a Myers-Briggs typing system for avatars and part of a metatype, just like I did for Hacking Attraction. And this time I chose something a little bit different. I was actually choosing based on when I discovered this, really, I was trying to find out which questions you could ask that are the easiest and most fun to answer. That was my initial thought, right? Because I was like, well, you can't personality type somebody at a bar. That's just terrible. But the reason why is because some of these questions are complicated.
Right.
Like, they need to sound really lighthearted and fun, right?
Right. A lot of them are deep questions intentionally, and if you're having a lighthearted, fun conversation, that's going to kind of kill the energy.
Right, exactly. So what I came up with was a system of four quadrants based on one part of the Myers-Briggs, and this time I did choose introvert-extrovert,
mm-hmm.
because we're talking about women here, and most... and again, introvert-extrovert can be painted in any different color with the rest of the system, right? So the rest of Myers-Briggs can change that completely.
Once we get to this, mm-hmm. I can give everyone a hint that might let them get introvert-extrovert without asking any questions at all.
Well, why don't you go and do that now? Because that sounds awesome.
Okay. There is one characteristic that I would say with about 80% reliability, it's not 100%, but it's you know, pretty darn good, that will tell you immediately whether someone's an introvert versus an extrovert, and that is their voice tonality.
Okay.
Introverts always sound, even if their voice projects, maybe it's a little loud, usually it's quieter, but volume is not what we're talking about here. Introverts always sound like they're holding something back in their voice. The vowels are a little more closed off, their voice sounds just a little more tightly controlled, a little more pinched, and it sounds like they're withholding something. Extroverts, their mouths open wider when they're speaking, mm-hmm. and so their tones are more open sounding, and they project more. They're, even if it's the same volume, it carries farther. So if you listen to the difference between Josh's voice and my voice, I'm an introvert. I'm speaking fairly clearly and fairly loudly, but it's still, in the tone, sounds like I'm holding something back, whereas his voice is much more open sounding, and that is the quick, dirty, easy way you can tell an introvert from an extrovert.
It's not really fair, though, because you have such an awesome, like, sexy radio man voice, you know?
Well, I do lick the microphone a lot.
That's a true story. So that's a really good one. So if you really need to practice looking for this, though. Obviously,
you need to train yourself a little bit to hear it. But once you do, it doesn't take that long. It's not that difficult. It's pretty accurate.
Okay. So I'm going to go into for Victor here. I'm going to go into the avatars.
Yep.
And what I did is I took introvert extrovert as one of the options, and then the other one I took is the metatype called options procedure. Now, one of the reasons why I chose this, again, is because it's really easy to ask this question when you're in a loud environment, whatever. It doesn't it seems kind of fun, right? But another reason why I chose it is because it can drastically change someone's personality and the way they approach a lot of things, especially relationships and interactions. Someone who's an options person is going to be way more likely to sleep with you on the first day than someone who's a procedure person, because they don't just have procedures. Okay, so let me tell you what it is. An options person is somebody who doesn't follow the rules. They know there's a set of rules there, and they try to do it on their own without looking at the rules, right? Think of putting together furniture, right? IKEA furniture or something.
Right. Do you read the directions, or you look at the pictures maybe and just try to figure it out as you go?
Yeah, and then when you screw up, then begrudgingly go back to the instructions, you know?
Right. You almost consider that a personal failure.
Right, exactly. Which is me.
Right.
You too, I guess.
Mostly, yeah.
Yeah. The other side is procedure. Procedure people, when you ask them that question, will typically go, why would you do anything except look at the instructions? They were written by the guys who made the furniture.
Right. It's going to save you time. It's going to ensure a good result. Why would you deviate from that? Doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. So when I get IKEA furniture now, I have to force myself to read the instructions because I have, statistically speaking, a better response than I do otherwise. If I'm in a hurry, I will. If I'm just like sitting around doing nothing, I'll sit there and try to put it together without any supervision.
Well, it's more fun.
It is a lot more fun for me. So when you put introvert, extrovert, and options procedure together, you come up with four quadrants. And I'm going to go over these different quadrants now so that you guys can hear that. Also, so you've never seen this before.
I've never seen this before.
So this is a very, this is probably one of my most advanced processes that I've created. This didn't do anything. I was trying to make this bigger, but it didn't work. Let me go ahead and click on it so we can get it. We can get a larger picture of it here on our end. Oops. Oh, that's why, because it's a Word document. Okay. We have this here. I'm just drawing up the little diagram here so we can look at it, so I can show Cameron. Oops. So let's look a little bit at introvert versus extrovert. All right, so extroverts, in this case, I'm just taking just the quality of extrovertness, extroversion rather, and just the quality of introversion to detect how people will prefer to interact for longer periods of time, right? So someone who's in interaction with you, who's introverted, who's out in a social environment, is going to be pretty easy to spot, usually. You're saying you can listen to them, but oftentimes, maybe 50% of the time, actually not often, but about 50% of the time, you can actually look at the way they're moving their body and tell about the same thing.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Not 100% of the time, though, and this is absolutely how it is. A lot of people think that the guy sitting in the corner, the girl sitting in the corner by herself, is definitely introverted. That's not necessarily the case at all.
Right.
Right.
Could be she's had a bad day. She's just kind of thinking about something. You know, there could be lots of reasons for that. Right. Introvert is one of them, but it's not definitively that reason.
Right. So when I took this, I was taking that into account, and I built this process. Now, the cool thing is I was able to overlay this directly to Hacking Attraction System. So it works with Hacking Attraction. If you look up in the corner, Cameron, you'll see Super Learner, Connector, Super Framer, Super Skilled. And these are different. These certain women are going to have a natural interest in certain types of guys from the Hacking Attraction System.
Yes.
So let me talk a little bit about these types. The four types are the romantic, the princess, the explorer, and the supporter. These are the four types. So I'll say that again. The romantic, the princess, the explorer, and the supporter. So the romantic, which my girlfriend's the romantic, by the way, are introverted options girls. These are girls who like change, usually drastic change every so often, maybe every few years, right? Mm-hmm. But the reason why they're called the romantic is because an introvert's version of an options person means that because she's introverted and she's kind of got her own internal world most of the time because she likes to refresh her energy by being alone typically, really values her own internal world a little bit more so than an extroverted person would. So for me, I value my internal world too. I'm extroverted, but I don't sit much. I don't spend much time in it.
Right. This is another area where the real distinction kind of makes more sense than what people think introvert extrovert means.
Mm-hmm.
All it really means, people think that introverts are kind of antisocial and don't like people much, and extroverts are gregarious and super social. And there's some truth to that, but that's not the whole story. Basically, all it really means is that introverts relate first to their inner world and second to the outside, quote-unquote, real world. Extroverts go the opposite way. They relate first to the outside world and second to their inner world.
Right, okay. So that's a really good way of describing it. So that means essentially that, when we go through this, this will make a lot more sense now that you described that. So if they're going to relate first to their internal world and they need massive change every so often, right?
Yep.
But also they're afraid of narrowing their options down.
Right.
Options people are really afraid of having fewer options.
Right.
Right, always. So typically what they want is someone like a romance novel guy, basically the character from a romance novel, to swoop in and take them away to somewhere.
Right.
Like, almost make the decision for them so they're passively experiencing something amazing.
Right. They want to experience something new but might not feel comfortable creating that on their own.
Exactly. If they create it on their own, they feel almost fake.
Right.
Right. And this is why they're called the romantics. So there's a specific way of approaching that girl. And by asking a couple of very simple questions, you can get this type, right? You can figure out her type. The princess is an introverted procedure person. This is a lot more traditional. More of like the... not really like housewife kind of girl, but someone who expects you to follow a specific set of rules in order to win her over, right?
Right.
She'll resist anything outside of that. So you have to know what the typical response is, and you have to follow it to a T, you know? You have to be able to go through the process and the system piece by piece by piece and not deviate very much. If you build rapport too quickly with a procedure person, especially an introverted procedure person, she'll feel deceived and scared. If you build rapport too quickly with an extroverted procedure person, she'll want to run away.
Right.
So it's like, I want to get out of there and just like, and leave and just freaks her out. So the, both the princess and the supporter are both, procedure women, procedure people. So when you run into a princess, if you try to sleep with her in the first night, typically you'll have no success with that.
Right.
Because she is following a process, and because she's in sort of her internal world first, she's going to be judging herself while she's going through this process with you, and she'll be very aware and scared that, that people around her are going to be judging her as well.
The only exception to that is if she is experiencing a massive amount of stress or pressure in her life, she will kind of probably flip and do something that's uncharacteristic. So in that circumstance, she might sleep with you the first night, but she will regret it later and probably avoid your phone calls.
Exactly. So I'm guessing that under an immense amount of stress, you'll flip-flop to the extreme opposite. So
That happens.
And in which case, the princess will become what's called the explorer, which is the fastest to sleep with you on the first date.
Yeah.
And then the romantic may go to the supporter and vice versa. This may sound a little confusing, so I'll get back into the point here.
Right. Let's talk about the way it works, not the exceptions.
Exactly. We're very fascinated by the exceptions, obviously. So the princess, again, if you know she's a princess and you try to go too quickly, you will ruin it, right? Now, the supporter is an extroverted procedure person. This is somebody who doesn't mind taking the back seat in the relationship and in the interactions, right? She wants to know that you have life goals and dreams and aspirations. She wants to know that
you're going somewhere,
right? Because you're going to take her there.
Right.
Right? She's extroverted. She wants to be the person who's like having all the conversations, and she can look over and see you in a room and everyone respects you, right? She needs that, and she needs to help you become that person. And one of the reasons why that is, yes? Question?
We should talk about this afterward, but I think I know of a system that this matches up with.
Okay. Another one?
Another one.
Okay. I got a few more questions here. I'm just going to accept them. Okay. So we will. Maybe that'll be the next call, next Founding Members Club call. So in the supporters, we have, because they're extroverted, they like to essentially be a part of your life, basically.
Right.
They like to explore your life, right? And they like to join your life and have a larger group of people to talk to. And as long as they respect you, she'll feel completely open and comfortable supporting you, right? And that's really what she's looking for. This is like a housewife, right? This is like the, when you think of a housewife. You
know? Donna Reed, Martha Stewart, that kind of thing.
Yeah, Martha Stewart's kind of...
she'd be more of a princess, maybe.
She's a little stronger in that like personal identity.
Yeah.
The supporter is a little bit more focused on supporting her man.
Gotcha. You
know? So she'll it's hard to see these women because many of them aren't in the spotlight.
Marge Simpson.
Marge Simpson is a supporter, exactly.
There you go.
And sometimes she shouldn't be, but she is.
Right.
Right. Mini
supporter or enabler.
Enabler, yeah, exactly. Could be either one there. And then finally, the explorer. The explorer group of women are the fastest to sleep with you on a first date. They can sleep with you really quickly because sex means almost nothing to them, right? Hey, you know why tennis players have a hard time with relationships? Because love means nothing to them. Oh! That's a joke. Anyway, so love is tennis speak for zero. That's what that means. Anyway, yeah. Brad and or Jay are somewhere laughing right now. So the explorer are the extroverted options women. Options women are more unorthodox around their relationships, and extroverts a little bit more let's say carefree in relationships, right? They're cool with like lots of social interaction because it fuels them. So the explorer, because she doesn't want to follow a system that's like the be in a monogamous relationship system, right? And because she likes to have her options open, she's an options person, and because she likes to be carefree for the most part as an extrovert, then that makes the perfect storm for the explorer. And the explorer will then, any statement whatsoever that ties her down will freak her out. She'll leave.
Yeah.
Like, these are the flakes. Explorers and romantics are flaky, but explorers are extremely flaky. They will flake on you. You have to go like, if you're going to text an explorer, you can't go, hey, I'd really like to go out with you sometime. You can't say that. You have to go, hey, I'm going to be here. If you feel like it, show up and we might hang out. There's so many like if-then statements in that, you know, and it has to happen like that.
Yeah, the explorers feel boxed in really, really easily. And so they'll run. They hate that feeling. They'll run as soon as they get any of that. So if you try to control them too much or anything that would be perfectly reasonable to another person, but to them feels like control, they'll bolt.
Exactly. And you may be like saying, you may be going very well, and then all of a sudden you say something and she's just gone, right?
Right.
Also, you may have a great, great night with her, hook up with her, everything. Try to call her the next day, she won't answer, or right. she'll blow you off, and you'll be like, what the hell happened here?
Right.
Right. So this is a really important process to understand. Can you say something?
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes you didn't even necessarily do anything wrong in that circumstance. Maybe she liked you a little too much and didn't want to be tied down by that.
Exactly. Exactly. And a lot of guys take that personally, obviously, and they freak out a little bit.
Right.
Now, let me talk about the hacking attraction types that these are associated with. If you are a super learner, it's very likely that you're going to attract a romantic easier in a much faster way. You have options. An introverted options person, seeing somebody who is almost like gregariously trying out new things, perceiver, difference person, gets that sort of romantic novel kind of personality type, right? So they come in, they are like, let's be spontaneous, right? And they sweep this person off their feet and then they leave, right? And they take them somewhere and they do whatever, right? They don't have to travel or anything like that, but you bring them into new experiences really quickly because you're comfortable with new experiences.
Right.
And because this woman is specific to you, she's different than the other women, she feels special enough to feel like this is a romantic environment.
Right.
The princess, princesses are immediately attracted to super connectors. Super connectors have the sort of like dinner and a movie kind of mentality, right? Let's just hang out and let's just be with each other and only each other. And let's spend that time together, and then we'll get to know each other a little bit better, right? This is something that the princess is used to. Right? She's comfortable with that. She's like, I'm used to guys, you know, buying me dinner, then calling me a couple of days later, and wanting to hang out again, saying you had a good time, you know, maybe sending me flowers, right?
Right. It's a procedure that she's familiar with, so she can kind of compare apples to apples and know whether she likes you or not.
Exactly. If you step outside of that procedure, you can ruin that interaction really quickly. Because she'll just be like, this isn't what I'm looking for. That she doesn't even say that. She's scared. She just doesn't like it.
Right.
So that's the princess. If you're a super connector, the princess is more likely the type that you're going to attract naturally without having to do anything, right? If you're a super framer, the supporter is going to be the one that's attracted to you, meaning that she wants to support you. You're a super framer. She's stepping into your world. She wants to be a part of your world, and that's what you do best is make people a part of your world, right? So that's what you would naturally attract. You have a question or a statement?
I'm just thinking.
Okay. And then the explorer is more attracted to the super skilled. And this one's really interesting. The explorer, because she likes lots of options, and the super skilled, because they like to approach lots of people all at once and see which one's the best option after that, you know?
Uh-huh.
If a super skilled person meets the explorer, the super skilled will flirt with everybody. The explorer sees that person has a lot of options, and then puts them in the same level as the explorer and decides to sleep with that person.
Right.
Right. Explorers are typically the ones at bars that are dressed up like crazy and like looking super, super, super sexy and talking a lot, right? Like having conversations with groups of people. Like the romantic would typically be dressed up the same kind of way, but instead of talking to a lot of people, maybe is sitting in the corner talking to one person, you know, like a little bit more focused on one interaction. And tends to leave a little bit sooner with somebody because they want to get out of that loud environment, right? The explorers, though, can bounce from one person to another for a long period of time. And they're looking for that person who has a lot of options, so they know that they're not going to tie them down.
Right.
And that's sort of that safety net that they have.
Yeah, the central theme around the explorers, as we've kind of mentioned, is they are scared of getting trapped, tied down. So if you come across like someone that's looking for a relationship, then that'll probably send them running.
Yeah, it will absolutely send them running. And it won't just send them running like from you at that moment, which it will do for sure.
Right.
But anytime you try to follow up, it'll also deter her from responding.
Right. It'll just reinforce her, assumption that what you're looking for is something stable, and you're going to try to lock her down.
Right.
So that would make the most sense for a person like that to go with the super skilled, because she can kind of tell that they're not really looking for anything super long term either.
Right. And they also see that person, that guy, attracting lots of women.
High status. Yep.
Yeah, so it's not just that he is an attractive guy. It's that lots of women are looking at him and talking to him. Even if 90% hate him, you know, she knows that if he keeps doing this, he's going to have a lot of options.
Right.
Just as a numbers game, right? You don't even have to be good. You just have to be doing the super skilled game, and that's it, right?
Right.
Which is basically saying, let's approach every girl in this bar. You know, that's a really simple process.
Yeah.
So you can attract any one of these types of women. I've attracted all of them, and it's relatively simple to do that. Some certain girls are going to turn you on more than others.
Right, you're going to have one of those types you're going to like a lot more.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just kind of how it is. There's no problem with that. The type that is similar to you might be most exciting for you, but I suggest that you explore all of them. Every guy likes the bottom left quadrant, which is the explorer, you know, because they sleep with you immediately. It's like every guy's looking for that girl.
And they tend to be good at it.
Yeah, exactly. They've done it enough, you know? So, you know, that's what every guy's looking for typically. So if you know the questions to ask, you can actually find out whether or not she is an explorer, and then that's the end of the conversation. You don't have to worry about anything else. You can just, you know, continue as normal, and you'll get a really great response from her. So so far we talked about a lot of really intense stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and get to another question here. I'm going to take Jonathan's question since it seems to be most relevant. So Jonathan asking, so can a person's personality type change, and can a person lie in between the spectrum of a dichotomy? Why don't you go ahead and answer that first?
Sure. The short answer is no, it can't change. The longer answer is it kind of can, but why would you want it to? Personality type is, at least in the system that I use most often, that we're talking about with these dichotomies, it's something that is either set so early in life that it might as well be in your DNA, or it's something that's actually in your DNA. And this has been verified with a lot of studies done by various brilliant researchers. It's kind of like being right-handed or left-handed. It's possibly be ambidextrous and be completely split in between. You can use either with equal comfort, but that's very, very rare, almost never happens. Usually you have a preference, usually a strong preference for one or the other. And now say that you're born right-handed, you're comfortable with that, you're building the skill of using your right hand all the time. Can you train yourself to use your left hand? Absolutely. You can totally do that. You can totally learn the skill, but it will never be as comfortable and as natural as using your right hand, because that's your natural inborn preference. So this is kind of like that. You can train yourself to use a different methodology, but it never fits quite as well, and it's a lot more work. So for most of us, the highest leverage thing to do is work on really accentuating your strengths instead of trying to shore up a weakness.
Okay, so that speaks to the can it change, and oh, well, the next one is can you fall in between the spectrum of a dichotomy? Like, can you be partially introverted, partially extroverted? Of course, the answer to that is yes, but maybe you talk a little bit more about it.
Well, everyone is a mixture of both, and those different parts of us come out in different times in our life, different environments, different experiences, just different context situations. So we're all a mix. I mean, you're part introvert and part extrovert. I'm part introvert, part extrovert, and so on. But you're still going to be more comfortable with one of those two in most circumstances, not all.
One of the really classic cold reading techniques is to make a general statement. Obviously, all cold reading techniques are general statements, but they sound really specific.
Yes.
Right? And one of the classic ones is you have a tendency to be introverted at times.
Mm-hmm.
But if the circumstance is right, then you feel completely comfortable being extroverted and being the center of all attention. And this is a cold reading technique, right?
Right.
So this is like 99% of people will say, yeah. Because you said both just now, right? And everyone is both, right?
Everyone
so
is both.
So anytime you have any of these dichotomies, you can actually make a person or a cold reading technique based on that dichotomy.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you tend to make decisions based on logic, like what is really truly in front of you, but there are times in which your gut speaks to you a lot more and you just go by what you feel.
Right.
Right. Of course you feel that's true for you.
That's true for everybody.
And it's true for me. It's true for everyone who's listening. Now, these statements feel so true individually and so specific that they feel like they're just about you, which would mean that I have some magical power.
Right.
Right. But the truth is that everyone feels the same way in this level. Right. So really interesting concept. I actually was just reading about that in a book called, what is it? The Full Facts Book of Cold Reading, that's what it's called, by Ian Rowling. So check that out if you want to. Anyway, so the next part of Jonathan's question is how do state or mood fluctuations affect personality? You already said that. So you said that depending on different contexts, your personality changes. He wants to know how it changes.
Right. That's an excellent question. And that depends on your specific type. There's like a very specific answer for you and your type. But in general, since I don't know you and your type, in general, when you're under extreme stress, you're going to flip into your opposite, and you're going to usually express that opposite in an immature way.
As in underdeveloped would be the best way to describe that.
Underdeveloped, yeah, because you're not used to using that part of your brain. So say that you're an extremely rational, logical thinker. Everything that you interact with has to make sense, and you keep thinking about it until it does make sense. You're very good at that. Under an inordinate amount of pressure, you might get uncharacteristically emotional and just kind of snap, lose your temper, blow up. And that probably is a big shock to you and everyone around you because they're used to you being so calm, rational, and measured. So a similar pattern happens with all of us depending on what characteristic we lean on the heaviest for our specific type.
Okay, and he continues basically just to elaborate. Can't I seem more introvert or extroverted with specific people, and then internal extrovert regarding certain issues? And you just said basically yes.
Yeah, introverts tend to feel more extroverted, more social, more comfortable around people they know, and around small groups. So those are just two examples, but yeah, context definitely matters.
Funny thing is that. Introverted judgers would be, and you are an introverted judger, yep. Would be much more, obviously much more in their heads, in their head, like not, am I saying in their head, I mean in your own mind, like in your own space, as in uh-huh. It's you, but you, than someone who would be an extroverted judger, right?
Right, yep.
Because introverted judgers have internal first, then external, and they like things that they understand, so they're not going to be around people as much unless they understand the environment. Even right. If they were extroverted, they'd still be the same way if they were a judger, right? They like to understand their environment. So that's kind of a perfect storm. And your personality type is a perfect storm, always. It's a perfect storm that makes up you and everything that you do.
Yes.
You know, and if you take one element, it could be blanket statement, but when you have all the pieces together working in the right way, and in Hacking Attraction, I actually go in Myers-Briggs, and then I go into metatyping as well. And if you were to have somebody, no one that I've done this with so far was exactly the same all the way across, but if you were to find somebody who was your exact same personality type and your exact same, Myers-Briggs type and your exact same metatypes,
uh-huh.
All of them, it would be like looking in a mirror almost.
Just about.
You know, there'd be definitely some subtle differences because there are reasons for getting up that are completely different, like
right,
Enneagram types that are completely different as well.
You have your own background, you have your own,
experiences, lessons.
Experiences, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Life lessons, or even like
the way you look is going to dramatically impact your life experiences.
Right, yeah. Exactly. But the processes will be very, very similar. It can feel like you're really talking to a brother or sister of yours, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to go into another question here. If you guys have any questions who are on the phone, this is a really good time to talk to Cameron. Go ahead and press star 2 now, and we will unmute you in just a minute, and you can chat with Cameron and myself about this stuff. It's really rare that I get to get Cameron on the line here, especially in person sitting next to me, so and with his clothes on. Which is an extra special treat.
That can end at any moment. So.
If it does, I'm out of here, guys. He's gonna have to finish the call. But yeah, if you do press star 2, if you're on the call, if you don't have a question, then the web on the webcast version, then go ahead and type it right in. We got Brett. I was hoping you would raise your hand because we talked about this before, and I really want to talk to you about it a little bit more and see what Cameron thinks about you and your personality type and whatever questions you have because. We've talked about this before, you and I personally, so I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, okay, Brett, and see what you have to say. What's going on, man?
Oh, not too much. Yourself?
Oh, you know, I'm working.
Yep.
Not too bad to be working. Yep. This is my
How
job.
How you doing, Cameron?
How's it going?
Pretty well. One of the questions that I wrote down was when you're typing people, specifically women, and if you're in a bar or something like that, could you pinpoint personalities by some of the wording that women use or people in general use?
Like the phrases they use?
Well, you know how some people say feel or see or you feel me, you sense what I'm saying, or you hear what I'm saying.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Different kinds of speech patterns.
Sort of a more emotional speech pattern.
Yes.
Yeah, well, feelers are definitely going to use feeling language a lot more, and thinkers are going to be using thinking language a lot more. So you feel me, or how do you feel about this, that kind of thing. That's going to tend to come from a feeler type. Words more or phrases more along the lines of, does this make sense to you, or do you understand? That's going to be more coming from a thinker. So yeah, definitely there's a handful of those.
I want to comment on that as well. At the same time, I think that the feelers may actually be, you know, if they're asking the question like, you know, do you feel me or anything like that, I think that you may also see a lot of other, you want to look for clusters in any case.
Right.
In order to be able to tell us, which is why I wanted to bring this up. If she's saying lots of stuff that has to do with feeling or, you know, a vibe.
Right.
Like this certain vibe or this certain energy, right? That kind of process. Then stuff that's not quantifiable by data. Then it's much more likely than if you get a cluster of these things all at once, you can tell whether or not she's a feeler, for sure, Brett. That's actually a really great question. It'd be really cool to sit down and get together a list of like feeler words so you guys could tell. But just knowing that she's a feeler, you got to keep in mind feelers just make decisions based on their emotions. They don't or their gut feeling, their feelings. It's not that they are more emotional necessarily. It just means that they make those decisions based on that criteria.
Right. All thinkers have emotions, and all feelers think in impersonal.
Incorrectly.
Yeah. All feelers think in impersonal, logical terms from time to time, depending on the situation. The trick is, which do you rely on the most? Which do you give a higher priority when you're making a judgment call?
Right. So, Brett, to answer your question, yes, you can, which is a really great question.
Yeah.
Any question that I can answer yes to is a great question. And then... but also, though, you want to look for clusters, Brett. You have other questions, too?
Yeah. Cameron, the last time I went to your webpage, it said that you guys were fully booked for coaching and check back and send an email. Are you guys open now for coaching?
Yeah, we're open for a bit of coaching right now. And
well, and let me answer that part of this.
Yeah, go for it.
Cameron, we were talking yesterday about this. Cameron booked up his class. So if he's saying that he's open, it just means that he's opening it up for this group. I just want you guys to know that because Cameron was just talking about this yesterday with me. He's like, oh, we booked it up and they don't have any seats left. This is a very small group that's live right now. Uh-huh. So look, I know it's why you're doing that. But
Yeah.
I wanted to express that ahead of time so that you guys know that.
If you're listening on a recording, this might not any longer be true.
It probably won't be.
Right.
But anyway, Brett, so continue, Cameron.
Yeah, we do a little bit of one-on-one work with people. Mostly what I do is I teach a course on this stuff to where you know it inside and out and can type most people through observation alone and failing that at least with a brief conversation and understand how they think inside and out. Basically, at the end of the course, you can interact with anybody and within the space of, you know, well, it varies, but, you know, an hour or two absolute max, they'll feel like you know them and understand them better than anyone they've ever met in their life.
And that's obviously very powerful and applicable. You're doing starting a course like soon, aren't you, for, is it a long course or a short one?
6 months.
You have a 6 month course starting?
6 month course is starting January 4th as the first class.
Okay, cool. So that's the one that you probably saw before, Brett, that was he just finished one of the other courses and now he's starting a new one and it's a live course, so... so yeah, if you do want to know more about that, Brett, can you email if you want to get in, because I don't think you can get in from the website right now unless he sends you a link. Why don't we do you want to just give your email?
You can email me at support@personalityhacker.com.
Yeah.
And Cameron will get that directly. He's apparently gets all the support emails. I don't know why he does that.
I get copied on them, so.
Okay. I don't get my support emails directly because that's a lot of stuff.
All right, I'll give you my personal one. Cameron, CAMRONN, @personalityhacker.com. That goes to me directly in case I am no longer getting copied on support
emails. Yeah, I would send it to the Cameron one. CAMRONN@personalityhacker.com. What were you going to say, Brett?
I was just going to have you guys repeat that. I'm sitting here trying to get to a place so I can write this down.
Oh, Brett, do you want me to email to you real quick?
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Okay, let me. I'll do that while you ask your next question. Do you have any other questions for Cameron?
I did a Myers-Briggs test not too long ago. I don't know how on point I was to it because a lot of the wording was I couldn't comprehend too well, and so
yeah, they're like that.
With all the questions, I just started like trying to feel it out and what I kind of sensed with it, and so I went through it. But Joshua said I came out close to pretty much I should be either a counselor or a lawyer.
What was your result?
I'd have to go find it. Okay. I'm not so
sure.
But, it was a while ago, but
you want to do a quick? Can you do a real quick one right now?
I can do a real quick one. It won't be super super accurate, but I can do a real quick conversation. One thing to keep in mind about all those tests, for starters, if you do one of the ones online for free, most of them are awful. They're just terrible. Some of them are pretty good, but most are not.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I'm sending this to you right now, Brett.
But even the best of the best, the official Myers-Briggs type indicator that you have to take from a licensed practitioner and pay, you know, $60 or $100 for, even that is wrong 20% of the time. So these tests are very helpful, but they're not the final word. If you get a result and you read it through it and you're like, that's just not me, then, I mean, you know you better than a test does. And that's the other reason why we go through this conversational process, because I can, you know, talk to you and have you answer like a normal human does, as opposed to forcing you to choose A or B when your answer really is neither of those. Those don't make any sense to me. So first question, are you more comfortable in a situation where you have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen next, you can kind of mentally prepare yourself for it, or a situation where you have no idea what's going to happen next, but you have total freedom to improvise and do whatever makes sense to you in the moment?
Which? No stuff that's in advance.
You prefer to know ahead of time?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Judger.
Yep. So that means that you're probably a judger as opposed to a perceiver. Judgers like to kind of think ahead a little bit. Perceivers prefer to focus all of their attention on what's happening right here, right now. And so obviously both have different strengths and different weaknesses. So next question. When you have to make a judgment call, when you have to form an opinion on something, do you give a higher priority on kind of the objective, impersonal facts and figures view of the situation? Or do you put more priority on the personal view of things, the way that people will be impacted by the decision, either yourself or others, the way people feel about it?
Personal impact.
Gotcha. So that's the basic essence of the thinker-feeler distinction. Yeah. Thinkers prefer an objective, impersonal viewpoint. Even if they're not focusing on a lot of data, they just like to kind of remove themselves from the equation and look at things that way. Feelers are more kind of connected to what's going on, and they are focused more on how people feel, how people are impacted. So, again, this is one question, so it's not definitive, but you would, based on that, be a feeler type. Next question. Are you... Let's see.
How many fingers am I holding up? Wrong.
Three.
Okay, go ahead, Cameron.
Thumb is not a finger. Anyway, for starters, I mean, everyone's at their core a unique person. You know, no two people are ever exactly alike. So let's just kind of like assume that we know that and that's all cool and set that aside for a minute. So taking that into account, but setting it aside, deep down, kind of like at your core, do you feel like you're basically the same as most people, like you have something really kind of profound and important in common with almost everybody? Or on that same deep down level, do you feel like there's just something kind of different about you compared to most people, maybe even a little bit alien?
Most of my life, I've felt that I've kind of been alienated from people.
Gotcha.
So.
Okay. So that is a question relating to the sensor-intuitive split. Sensory people that take in information directly through their five senses make up about 75% of the population. Intuitive people take in information through kind of subconscious pattern recognition, and they don't quite think the same way that sensory people do. It's probably the biggest difference there is. So combining those two things, being in the minority of the population and just thinking a bit differently, intuitives almost always feel a little bit alienated. They just kind of know that they don't quite fit in. So the way you answered on that, you would be an intuitive person. Now that is a quite accurate question most of the time, but there are some things that can throw it off. Like I had a friend or have a friend who's definitely a sensory person, but he's over, well, I don't know if over, he's about 7 feet tall and he's a former basketball player. So he sticks out like a sore thumb no matter where he goes. And he says he feels like an alien for obvious reasons. He just, you know, always sticks out in a crowd and people notice him.
Right.
He's still a sensor though. So
my guess with Brett, it was sensor whenever I talked to him.
Yeah, I thought I was sensor too.
What's that?
You got it too, you said?
I thought from your typing, Joshua, I came out as sensory. Mm-hmm. And I believe the test that I took, it came out as sensory too. So.
Yeah, I thought so too. And one of the main reasons why, and this is like, when I got that same response back, because this is the hardest one for me to figure out,
right?
Is the intuitive sensor split. When I got it from you, Brett, I had to do some deeper digging to figure out whether or not it was. And one of the major things that I found with Brett is that intuitives tend to have this sense of helplessness when following a system built by society, like climbing a ladder, almost like it's never going to work or they're going to be a failure forever. And
right, intuitives prefer to innovate.
Yeah, and then sensors tend to be comfortable in that environment because it was kind of built for their personality type, the way they're thinking. And Brett, I know, was comfortable with that. He likes to branch outside of it, but he always looks for a framework.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why I thought sensing was the major function. So
could be, or it could be the JP thing coming through too, because judges are a bit more comfortable following a procedure at least at first.
That makes sense.
So it could be one of either of those. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, anyway, so that's kind of up in the air. But N is what your assessment was, just from that one question.
Just
obviously.
From that one question, well, right?
Okay.
I grew up with dyslexia, so that kind of probably why I kind of felt that way.
Gotcha.
You mean less dyslexia? Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm dyslexic too. I don't know if you know that or not, Brett, do you?
Yeah, I've heard you say it once or twice. I've never had a conversation with you about it.
Yeah, I have to have this thing called text expander on my computer that rearranges the letters and words that I type because I type them backwards all the time as I'm typing. I just type them all backwards. I'll type a whole sentence where words will be mixed up. Everything will be jumbled, but I do it in a certain pattern every time. Like is L-I-E-K. Almost every time I write it, you know, and I'll just like, that's just kind of what I do. And if I get wrapped up in something, I'll start repeating a word backwards or jumbled up sometimes, which is why I said less dyslexia. It's like my joke with myself instead of dyslexia.
My brother's dyslexic as well. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dyslexic people can be smart.
Yeah. okay. So last question. How much alone time do you need to have in order to kind of feel like yourself?
How much?
Yeah. And, you know, this is a ballpark because it's going to vary day to day. But, like, are we talking about, like, 5 hours a day or, you know, 2 minutes a day? Or I hate being alone.
Oh,
I want people around me all the time.
I love it. I try to spend unless I know people really, really closely, I have to pretty much be by myself to
Gotcha. Okay, so you would be an introvert then, and that came through in your voice. I don't know about you, but that was something that, kind of based on that tonality thing that we talked about earlier, I could hear before even asking that question, so I was just kind of asking it for the record.
So what I got whenever I did Brett was ISFJ.
Right, so the only thing that we're having a question on is sensor or intuitive, ISFJ or INFJ. And obviously having three out of those four the same means that whichever of the two you are naturally, there's going to be a lot of similarity there.
So what's the primary function of an IS or INFJ?
Actually, I can probably sum this up. This will go a little bit more complicated from the dichotomies we're talking about. But
if you can just give like a really, really like general, easy to understand, or
okay, I'll do that
version and make it kind of quick too, because we have a couple more questions to get to.
Sure. So the biggest difference between an INFJ and an ISFJ is the main way that they think, and this is something that happens below the surface. It's not quite as obvious. An ISFJ uses a mental process that we call memory. What they're really good at is combing through this kind of massive mental database that they've collected of their past experiences and seeing what's worked before and what hasn't worked before, and applying that to new situations that they're trying to figure out. An INFJ does something similar but distinctly different. What they do, instead of combing through their past experiences, is they take an idea or a concept and they reframe it. They look at this thing from one angle, then another, and then another, and then another, until eventually the solution to the problem just kind of becomes clear on its own. So it's essentially sorting through your past experiences to see what applies to the current situation, or redefining the current situation in order to come up with a solution.
Brett, does either of those kind of strike home with you?
Oh, the second the second set of second description you gave just totally just stuck with me. So
the redefining thing.
Maybe he isn't. Yeah. Then.
Gotcha. Okay. So if you're an INFJ male, then that's about the rarest combination of them all. So you would probably have felt like a bit of an alien most of your life. And that would be very understandable. INFJs are rare to begin with. That mental.
Kelsey's an INFJ.
Kelsey's an INFJ.
My girlfriend.
Yeah, my mother is actually as well. They're some of my best friends are INFJs.
no big deal.
No big deal. Yeah, that process that I was describing is in the course that I teach what we refer to as perspectives, and it's the rarest of all eight to have as a strength. So people that have that as a strength usually feel pretty different from other people. INFJs are rare to begin with. They're about 2% of the population, but a slightly larger percentage of them are female than male. So a male INFJ is significantly less than 1% of the population.
Okay.
So that's why you feel weird.
Yeah. there's some disadvantages. You're not going to fall into...
If you didn't feel like an alien before, you do now.
Oh, sorry?
What's that, Brad?
If you didn't feel like an alien before, you do now.
Yeah.
Well, the cool thing is it's a little bit validating because you've got the feeling either way. So knowing that there's a reason for it kind of helps, at least in my experience. You don't have to stick with that, and I recommend not kind of resting in that space, but... there is a reason for it, so that at least kind of makes some things make sense. But the cool thing is that you have the capacity to bring a very unique perspective to the world. INFJs have a knack for getting inside other people's heads and understanding how they feel better than just about any other type. So as a guy, being able to do that when almost no other guys can,
it's pretty powerful.
That can be a serious advantage.
Brett, does that make sense?
No. Can you explain on that a little more?
Well, we can't go too much longer because we're gonna have to answer a couple more questions.
I know.
But
I'll recap real quick. An INFJ, well, they're one of the things they're absolutely best at is understanding how other people feel, kind of from the inside out. They tend to have this almost scary. Almost psychic ability to get where other people are coming from. Most men do not have that ability. So if you have that capacity to really, truly understand what someone else is experiencing, then that can be a massive advantage, if for no other reason than it's incredibly rare.
And Brett, are you a super connector?
Yes.
So this is like compounding on top of your ability already. You're like built for rapport, right. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is heads on. Like I can sense people just from looking at their body language, what they're feeling.
That's definitely an INFJ thing. A lot of INFJs will say stuff like they could be in a coffee shop and there could be someone that was having an emotional breakdown or just kind of being upset behind them where they couldn't see them or hear them, and they would still know.
Because they're
superheroes. They just say that a lot, and you hear it enough times from enough different people that don't know each other, and you start to think maybe there's something there. I don't know. In any case, very, very strong ability to pick up on this stuff.
So that's why I did type as a counselor?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yep.
Hey, Brett, I'm going to go ahead and mute you and open a couple of the lines here. Is that cool?
Yep.
All right, thanks, man.
Thanks, Brett.
All right, I'm going to go to Cleveland, Ohio. I'm not sure who this is. You there?
Hey, what's going on? This is Terry.
Hey, Terry.
Terry?
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing? It's Josh.
All right, how you guys doing?
You ever heard of me before? Kind of a big deal.
Hello?
I'm joking. what's going on, Terry?
I was listening, and
that's your first mistake.
I'm maybe an INFJ as well. Mm-hmm. I thought I was an INFP, but I think I'm actually more of a judger. And I was curious to the fact of like, is there specific ways that each type of groups like learn? As far as I have a lot of books and stuff on different topics. I tend to like to have a lot of different background information before I can like branch out and do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if there's like different ways to help like streamline just learning new skill sets. That's the way I've been doing basically. Maybe I'm doing something that's more towards my weakness.
You know, I don't know. You said you got INFJ, but you sound kind of extroverted by the speech pattern that you have. I don't know if that's like something that I'm not sure if that's true or not. I don't know. Maybe we should get Cameron.
Let's just do it real quick. How much alone time do you need to feel kind of like yourself?
A lot. Like when I'm at work, I'll go like by myself a little bit just to kind of relax a little bit. If I'm talking a lot, if I'm in a comfortable group, I can talk a lot, but then I have to be by myself to kind of recharge again.
What about outside of work?
I'm usually by myself in my room reading a lot.
Okay, well that's pretty indicative.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, masturbating alone, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. All the time. You know, that's how we do.
Introverts always masturbate in public.
this is true.
Right. No. So the JP thing. Are you more comfortable in a situation where you have no idea what's going to happen, but you have total freedom to do whatever makes sense to you, or a situation where you do have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen next and you can mentally prepare?
I like to mentally prepare. Not knowing kind of really gets me nervous.
Gotcha. So. Okay. Now, again, this is not 100%. It's a really short assessment. But let's just say that you're an INFJ for now. You're basically going to need to read slowly. And you're going to spend a lot of time digesting the material. You'll get more out of it than the average person would, but you'll go through it a lot less quantity. The biggest strength for you, again, would be that perspectives process, and that's the ability to, among other things, kind of watch what connections your mind is forming. And see how one idea maybe connects to another idea that in a weird way that makes total sense, but most people would never see. So you might read a paragraph and then think about it for 20 minutes because it gives you all kinds of ideas. So just kind of be okay with that and go with it. You're reading, try to have your back to a wall so that you're facing the room. When you're getting into this kind of the zone, interruptions are really jarring. So if you have your back to the room or especially your back to a doorway, part of your brain's going to be on constant alert for some interruption to come in, and it's going to prevent you from being able to really focus. So try to set your environment up that way.
But you said don't have my back to a room.
No.
Right.
Have your back to a wall and the power seat, so to speak.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's like Kelsey's the same way, dude. Kelsey's an INFJ, and she always picks the power seat.
Yeah.
Which is the seat facing the door, you know?
Which part of the personality is
wants the power seat?
Dictating that you should take the power seat, yeah.
The one that makes the food. No, I'm just kidding. I don't really. What do you think?
That's an NJ thing. Intuitive judgers.
Okay.
Okay.
So as far as like, go ahead.
Nope. After you.
I was gonna say, as far as like interaction wise, because I know I tend to kind of get caught up in my head, and like I want to try to get where I can more, I guess, control instead of reacting when I'm like conversing or out in an environment. What would be a, I guess, a better approach.
You have a pretty good sense of what is socially acceptable or unacceptable, right, in any given situation?
Most of the time, yeah. Sometimes I'm a little weird out there, but
sure.
Most of the time, good.
We got to keep it interesting, right? So this is what we would call your growth process. Everyone has a configuration of four different mental processes that kind of bake up their personality. And this is a separate thing from the dichotomies we were talking about earlier. So I'm not going to go too far into it because I don't want to confuse anybody. But just keep in mind, we're talking about something different than the dichotomies. We were talking about that process that you're using really heavily called perspectives. And this is a natural strength for you. That's an introverted part of you as well. So it's going to feel a lot more comfortable for you to kind of be in your own world, be in your head, and be watching those connections form, seeing what's going on in there, and so on. Now, the extroverted part of you is different. It uses a process that we call harmony, and that is being able to tap into the emotional experience that other people are having, understand how they're connecting to each other, and so on and so forth. One of the kind of offshoots of that is you'd usually have a pretty strong sense of what is acceptable or unacceptable in any given social situation because you're able to kind of read those emotional reactions from people. So for starters, kind of knowing that that is a natural strength of yours, but it isn't as comfortable to use as perspectives is, allows you to focus on it. So what you want to focus on is reading the emotional display of the people around you and practice working with that. You have the aptitude. It's just a matter of developing it.
Basically, you're going to be responding a lot to body language.
Yeah, a lot of it's body language.
Especially facial recognition. Have you ever studied any of Paul Ekman's work, Terry?
Paul Ekman, you said?
Yeah.
I've read a little bit. Like, I saw like little stuff about it, but I haven't really dove into it.
Yeah, probably the best thing I've seen, to be honest, that's the most entertaining is Lie to Me, the show Lie to Me.
Yeah, it's great.
It's an awesome show. It's Paul Ekman does consulting on the entire series. So if you want to see some stuff, it's real. The stuff they're saying is real because I read his work. So it's the same stuff he teaches.
Yeah.
So you can go ahead and just watch that show. You'll be entertained. You won't have to worry about distractions because it's super engaging. And just take notes like you're watching something that's like a lecture, you know. And write down what you're doing, and that way, like, if you have Netflix or something, you can watch all the episodes on there, and you'll gain a lot of that out of that, man. It'll be really, really awesome. So
one more thing, and this will make this quick because I know we got to move on, but when you're kind of like in your head, you know, you're having your own private time, are you thinking in words most of the time, or are you just kind of thinking in something not verbal?
I think it's sometimes a mix between like feelings and words.
Sure.
I guess. Yeah, I think because sometimes I kind of go through pictures of stuff from my past or like ideas in the future, and
gotcha.
It's a mix of a lot of different things.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so to practice strengthening the extroverted part of yourself, work through stuff, practice thinking through things specifically verbally. Think it through in language alone. And it actually helps to talk into a voice recorder and just kind of talk the problem out, even if you don't have someone else there. Accessing the verbal part of your brain is going to access the extroverted part.
Okay.
That'd be $1,000.
That cleared up a lot of things.
Cool.
Yeah.
Seriously, voice recorder.
Voice recorder.
Okay.
And then leak those to WikiLeaks, and we will have all your intimate details about laundry or whatever it is you're talking about.
Right.
Be looking for that soon, man.
All right, Terry, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Terry.
All right, thanks, guys. Bye.
All right, one more call here. This is in Fairfield, California. Are you there?
Hey, yeah, Josh. It's Victor.
Hey, Victor. Good. How you doing?
Doing good. I just had a quick question. I was listening earlier about your four avatar types, right?
The avatar types, yep.
Yeah, and I had a quick question. See, when you drop the polyamorous bomb, are there a certain type who take it aggressively, or like is there a certain type that takes it better?
Yeah, absolutely. The romantic and the explorer are going to take it way better. than the princess and the supporter are. Because the princess and the supporter see polyamory as being untraditional. You know, they see it as being unorthodox, something that's not the procedure they know about. So they take a lot more explaining of that. The romantic will tend to try to lock you down sooner. So, like, you may be polyamorous with the romantic. They're comfortable with polyamory, especially in the beginning, because they're options driven, you know, after all. So they're going to want lots of options. So that's perfect for them. But they're going to be more likely to try to pin you down into a monogamous relationship afterwards. So you have to do a lot more reinforcing with the romantic. The princess, you're going to have to do a lot more, which is an introverted procedure person. You have to do a lot more explaining of what it is and make it sound like it's completely normal.
Right.
Like,
right.
She's already doing it, she just hasn't recognized it yet, you know? And you say, oh, it's basically just dating around, except that I'm honest about it. Okay, well, that's okay. That's part of the procedure, right? But if it's...
Yeah, if you can frame it in terms of something that they already find acceptable, that'll help.
It'll help a ton. In fact, it'll make it possible. Right. Otherwise, it's not going to work for the princess or the supporter. The supporter would have to hear that you are dating around because you're too busy, you know? The reason why you're polyamorous is because... you haven't found someone that you want to be with that you feel like can stand by your side and can keep up with you, you know? But even if you say that, she's going to want to be the one to be that girl, you know? So you got to be careful with that too. The main thing to focus on though, the explorer will almost always be awesome, excited about that, like always. And then the romantic will almost always be excited about that unless she has prior history with you and she's already built rapport and there's something else going on. She'll try to tie you down, you know?
Okay, got that.
So there are a lot of other really subtle dynamics when it comes to these different avatars. I have a book coming out. It won't be out for at least 6 months, but I have a book called The Avatars. Maybe called something else by the time it comes out, but when it comes out, you'll probably buy it because it's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be going over each one of these different types, so you'll probably get a copy of it. You know, if you have any other questions about it, just let me know. And I teach how to go through and actually ask these questions and type girls as you're talking to them in a bar or whatever kind of environment, live. So, obviously really cool, but at the same time, if you have any questions in between now and then, post them either in the members area or again, on these calls, I'm more than happy to talk to you about them on here. So,
gotcha. Thanks for talking about it, man. And, so there's a way to drop the bomb that'll make it effective on off-war avatars, right?
Yeah, there is. But the truth is, whenever it's not so much dropping it, it's what happens immediately after that that shifts for every single type, every single one of the avatars. So if you drop it, you don't know what kind of avatar she is usually. So you drop it, and then she responds in a weird way. You're gonna have to sort of hit the reset button, and then drop it in another way. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you'll start to sound really, like, really needy, you know, and things like that will start to come across. Like, oh, no, it's not like that. It's like this. And, you know, you don't want to come across like that. You don't want to be making any apologies or anything like that. So, does that make sense, Victor?
Yep, totally makes sense. Thanks a lot, man.
Perfect. No problem, man. Thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, so we got a couple more questions, and then we're going to have to split because of time here. I'm going to go ahead and take Tony's because I skipped over his before. Are there instances where you move back and forth between phases of the system? I think, I'm not sure what system I'm referring to here. Let me see. For instance, when hanging out for the first time after attraction and some rapport was built. Okay, some rapport was built. During the first meeting and after several text exchanges, do you start back up with lighter banter or in the attraction phase? Okay. So after you have built rapport, if you leave... and the rapport settles, meaning that you've left and you guys have had other interactions that usually if you sleep and you wake up, that usually resets you. You're going to have to start back out in attraction. If you sleep with somebody and after you sleep with them, you've gotten past the seduction phase. At that point, you're now no longer in attraction, rapport, or seduction. You're in relationship balance. So things change then. So keep that in mind. But here's another one. It says, if rapport was built during the first meeting and several text exchanges, first off, you never build rapport over text. Don't do that because you need to anchor rapport to a physical touch. If you don't anchor to the trust you build during rapport to touch, then you're heading toward the friend zone because that's what the friend zone is. The friend zone is trust, but no sexual trust or sexual physical trust, more of just emotional trust. And you become sort of an emotional tampon there when that happens. So you, if you have not gone to seduction yet, yes, every time you see her, you're going to be back to banter again. If you have slept with her or hooked up with her or been sexual and consummated in some kind of way, then you are no longer in that stage. You're now free to sort of roam the relationship balance process and bounce between different rapport and attraction phases later on, which we'll get into some other time. If you want to know more about that, go ahead and swing back to the last few calls. We talked a lot about that in the last few Founding Members Club calls. Next question is from Jonathan. He says, you guys know how alcohol affects personality types, a person's personality type.
I research that nightly.
Do you? Very intense research. I do know that it can make someone seem as though they are on the opposite side, but the truth is I believe that it actually takes away inhibitions more than anything.
Right.
So an introvert who wants to communicate with people may have less of a filter over what they say. It doesn't mean that they are extroverted. It still means that they process in exactly the same way as before, but now they don't have any inhibitions about saying what comes to mind. So probably more than anything, it's not going to be that they don't need any time alone to recharge. That's not the case. If a drunk introvert was drunk for an extended period of time, it'd be very likely that they'd still need to be alone to recharge. Everybody who has a hangover needs to be alone to recharge.
Right.
but if they are introverted, and basically, here's how it works. Introverted or extroverted, when drinking, tend to be more extroverted, seem to be more extroverted. But it's not that they're actually shifting. It's more as if their inhibitions and their things that they're holding back that they would normally say but they're afraid to, or they want to say but they're afraid to, that inhibition goes away. So it's less about whether or not they recharge more from talking to people or being around lots of people in an environment like that, social environment. It's more about whether or not they are able to get over their inhibitions quickly.
Yeah, I'd say that's basically what I've observed as well. There are exceptions to that, but I mean, we're talking about a chemical that has a number of different effects on your physiology and neurophysiology. So there's, I don't think you can encapsulate alcohol's effect in one simple thing for all circumstances. In general, though, it's basically matches what I've observed. It just reduces the inhibition.
Okay. One last question, then we get a split here. So thank you guys so much for being a part of this call. It's gone 10 minutes longer than our max, which is awesome because we are really kicking ass here. Another last question from Jonathan here. It says, what does it mean when a girl's affectionate or not affectionate, and what kind of girl is more comfortable or wants public display of affection, and which kind of girl does not want public display of affection? And does public display of affection reflect on relationships' health? Okay, first off, no. PDA does not reflect on a relationship's health unless the person wants and is comfortable with public display of affection, meaning that touching, holding hands, whatever, in public. Those kinds of girls, if they want it and they're used to it normally, for example, procedure women, and they're not doing it with you, then that's definitely a reflection.
Yeah.
You know, of health in the relationship. If they do want it and they're doing it, great. If they don't want it and they're not doing it, no problem, you know. But the most important thing that I've seen that reflects PDA is our cultural boundaries, to be honest. Certain cultures will not accept public display of affection. A lot of Eastern European girls do not hook up with guys or kiss guys that they just met in public. You get them alone, they will. It's no big deal, right?
Right.
But when they're in public, they won't do it. A lot of Latina girls have no problem with it whatsoever. They will be very affectionate in public, and they don't really care. So this really is a very culture, because it's about cultural rules and social rules. It's about breaking social rules in a way that's not going to make you accepted within your culture. Meaning, if it's slutty within the culture, considered slutty or whatever, within a culture or frowned upon to show any affection, religion also has a massive effect on this too, then you are not going to see a lot of PDA. But if, again, it's all about the culture, but if you have a, if you are good enough to create your own mini culture, meaning that when a woman steps into your world, she's sort of like, especially if you're a super framer, she steps into your world and you are
Rules apply when she's with you.
Exactly. Different rules apply. So if that's the case, and if you don't know how to do that yet, you need to learn how to do that. That's really important. You definitely check out the 5-week body language mastery course, Jonathan, because I go over some of the different stuff in a section called psychological space. which is a really cool section there. Check that out. That one's all about, mostly about putting your different hats on and making women sort of step into your world. You can actually get past that if you do it, but she'll snap out of it at some point, and she'll have like sort of what's called blowback, where she'll be like, I shouldn't be doing this. I need to go. I need to blah, 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 you know, whatever. And she'll want to freak out a little bit. So if she's affectionate, it could be who she is always. But if you see her being affectionate with other people and not you, that's a problem. Right. So you need to gauge her default state, and then even talk to her about it, man. I mean, it's a really quick conversation. You know, do you get weirded out by public display of affection? If she doesn't want to do it with you, she'll say yes. And then if you see her do it with someone else, then make a mental note and know that that's not healthy. You know, right. Any girl that is showing public display of affection with you, but not anybody else, right? Is investing more in you and will probably stay with you, right?
Right. The thing to keep in mind here is that whether it's intentional and calculated or unintentional, you are signaling the people in your environment something very specific when you have a PDA. So women are generally more sensitive to that than men are. The specific thing that's being signaled in that situation is going to depend on the culture and a bunch of other factors, but right. In general, yeah, I mean, if she's doing it with other people, not you, then that's a bad sign. If she's doing it with you and not other people, then she's sending that signal out, and that's saying that you have, well, in simple terms, she's comfortable being seen connected with you.
Right. Now, she may not, you know, it's all contextual, of course, because it's all cultural, and all cultures are your immediate social surrounding. That's all they are. So you're at her family's house, and maybe she's not going to be. Maybe she will be more at her family's house because they want her to settle down, you know? So she's playing that up a little bit. But anytime you see this following pattern, you're about to get cheated on. So keep this in mind.
I'm taking notes.
The following pattern is she's affectionate with other people, but not you in public. If that's happening, you're about to get cheated on, if you haven't already been cheated on. So keep that in mind. You have to correct that immediately. The way to correct that is to, A, bring it up, and say that you don't like it. That's the first thing you have to do. She's probably going to push back and be like, well, if you don't like that, that's who I am, so blah, 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 right? But that just means she wants out of the relationship, you know? If I were you in that situation, the way to save it typically is to break up and just be like, look, let's just go back to being polyamorous or something. Like, let's just go back to just dating. I think we went too fast here. Let's kind of start over from scratch, you know what I mean? And when you start over from scratch, it sort of gives her the opportunity to look around at the rest of her options and then put you in the middle of it to see where you sit. If you don't rise to the top of those options, you've fucked up already, you know, and she's going to leave you anyway. So keep that in mind. So that's it, guys. I have a couple other questions here, but I didn't get to, from Samu in Helsinki. I know that he wanted to get to these, so I'm going to go ahead and copy these down and then see if I can get these on the next call. So we'll do that. Jonathan says, thanks for being here, Cameron.
Thanks, Jonathan.
I wish I could say the same thing, you know.
You'll see it later.
Ouch. Thank you guys very much for being a part of this call. We really appreciate you being here. And anything you need at all, please don't hesitate to holla on the members area. Cameron actually is a member in the Dow of Badass members area. So maybe he'll be able to check on there and respond back to some things. And maybe you guys will be able to chat with him a little bit on there. He's rarely logged in because he's working a lot, but we'll see if we can get him in there every once in a while to do a quick Q&A. Thanks again, guys, for everything, and we look forward to checking you out in the next, I believe it's 2 weeks from now, because this month has a lot of weeks, actually. So in 2 weeks, let me see if I can get my calendar up to tell you those exact dates real quick. 1 second. Okay, that's the 15th, is the next founding members call. So next week I will be in New York, which is awesome. So if you guys signed up for that boot camp, awesome. That's really rad. I'll be there. 3 days of infield work, 3 days of coaching with Brad and myself. So in the flesh. So looking forward to meeting you guys out there if you do get to do that. Brad, you got something to say?
Nope.
Oh, you just unmuted yourself?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, why not? Why not? So, okay. Well, thank you guys very much. Brad, thanks for being on the call, obviously. As always, you're a pleasure, even when you're not talking.
You missed all my laughs. this time because I was muted.
Oh, yeah. It's because you're breathing like Darth Vader.
I'm sure everybody's getting to know my laugh pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. I still need to get you to do the, what's it called? Gollum voice at some point, but we can wait on that one. Not today. It's too good for today.
No, no.
All right, guys. Thanks again, and we'll see you guys in 2 weeks on December 15th for the next Founding Members Call.
Cheers.